It is Thursday, July 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Chinese Nobel Peace Prize laureate Liu Xiaobo dies in a hospital.
I think that many people are just feel a sense of grief, of course, at his loss, but also outrage that he never should have been in prison to begin with.
U.S. President Donald Trump defends his outreach to Russia and his eldest son. And singer Gallen tours with singer-songwriter John Legend. It's all ahead. One of China's most prominent dissidents, Liu Xiaobo, died Thursday following a battle with liver cancer. The 61-year-old Nobel Peace Prize laureate spent his last 8 years as a prisoner of conscience. He died at a hospital in Shenyang, China, where he had been moved from his prison cell in the final stage of his illness. His final days were marked by a public dispute over the quality of his care and Beijing's refusal of a family request that he be transferred for treatment to the United States or Germany. Liu was sentenced to 11 years in prison in 2009 for his part in the Charter 08 movement and other subversive activities. Charter 08 calls for an end to China's one-party system and the establishment of a new republic comprising a federation of regions and political communities. Liu became world famous when he was named as the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize laureate for his long and nonviolent struggle for fundamental human rights in China. Liu also took part in the 1989 Tiananmen Square pro-democracy protests, and he was jailed for his participation. I spoke with William Ni, China researcher for Amnesty International Hong Kong, shortly after Liu's death was announced. I asked him for his reaction to Liu's death.
Well, you know, I think the thing to remember is that this is China's Nobel Peace Prize laureate, and he died in prison and should have never been there. And when he was given this, you know, 11-year sentence at the time, it was absolutely outrageous. And I think that many people are just feel a sense of grief, of course, at his loss, but also outrage that he never should have been in prison to begin with. And unfortunately, what we've seen over the last few years is that the trends towards human rights have only gotten worse, and that the government's space for civil society and for freedom of speech have been narrowing and narrowing, constricting, especially since Xi Jinping came to power. So, but at the same time, I think that many people in China, many people in civil society, are remembering Liu Xiaobo warmly and see him as an inspiration. Hopefully his legacy will live on.
Now, he didn't die in prison. He died in a hospital, and there had been calls for him to be sent, along with his wife and I believe his wife's brother, out of the country for treatment. And apparently that is what Liu wanted, but Chinese authorities did not allow that.
Yeah, I mean, Chinese authorities seemed to want to stage manage his death, quite frankly, and wanted to manage all information in and out of Liu Xiaobo's, or regarding Liu Xiaobo's health. Now, he did want his wife, the poet Liu Xia, and her brother to go abroad. And I think that this will be a very crucial thing for the international community to focus on in the days and weeks ahead, is to allow her to go abroad. You know, she was under house arrest, you know, for 7 years, literally for nothing, for only being the wife of Liu Xiaobo. So, you know, all human beings have the international or the human right to travel freely. This is an internationally recognized human right. And so Liu Xia has the right to go abroad if she so chooses. And this is one thing that Amnesty International will continue to press for as far as the Chinese government, to give her the real freedom to do what she wants.
In Hong Kong, how much notice has been taken of Liu's death? Has this been broadcast on television and radio, I mean, or on the internet? How much are citizens there aware of this?
Well, you know, I think it's a little bit too soon to say how widespread this has been in Hong Kong. I mean, he literally died, or the news of it just came out 20 minutes ago. But I would say that many, many people in Hong Kong have been concerned. The Pan Democrats and the LegCo, China's kind of Congress, raised concerns about this today. Joshua Wong, one of the most famous pro-democracy figures, have raised noise about this. There have been protests. So I think that many people are very concerned about Liu Xiaobo, not only because of what he represented in terms of democracy and human rights for China, but also because he's a person who consistently raised out his voice for Hong Kong, too. And so I think that that's another reason why people in Hong Kong care about Liu Xiaobo and his unfortunate death.
William Nee, China researcher for Amnesty International, speaking from Hong Kong. Meanwhile, there's been worldwide reaction to Liu's death. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is calling for China to release Liu's widow from house arrest. He said in a statement hours after the Nobel laureate's death, "I call on the Chinese government to release Liu Xia from house arrest and allow her to depart China according to her wishes." The leader of the Norwegian Nobel Committee said Thursday the Chinese government bears a heavy responsibility for the dissident's death. Barrett Rice Anderson said, "We find it deeply disturbing that Liu Xiaobo was not transferred to a facility where he could receive adequate medical treatment before he became terminally ill. The Chinese government bears a heavy responsibility for his premature death," she said in an emailed statement. Rights groups were quick to praise his achievements and legacy while calling on the international community to investigate deaths in captivity and work to prevent them. Sophie Richardson, China director for Human Rights Watch, said, "Even as Liu Xiaobo's illness worsened, the Chinese government continued to isolate him and his family and denied him freely choosing his medical treatment." She said the Chinese government's arrogance, cruelty, and callousness are shocking, but Liu's struggle for a rights-respecting democratic China will live on. The UN human rights chief expressed deep sorrow over Liu's death, saying in a statement that the human rights movement has lost a principled champion. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. And Andrew, I'm sure there's been a lot of reaction to Liu's death.
There is, from around the world, lots of people taking to social media to mourn his passing and praise him and what he did and tried to do in China. Amnesty International tweeting out that they're mourning his courage and dignity, saying that he inspired millions of activists globally, and saying that even though he's passed, his inspiration will live on. Human Rights Watch also tweeting out, saying, "Liu Xiaobo, a brave champion of nonviolence, human rights, and freedom, that he'll be remembered throughout China and throughout the world." Now, a lot of people wondering if his death will be in vain, if there'll be any changes going forward, and that's the hope, that this will live on even though he's passed, and that there will be some more democratic reforms and things in China. But lots of people noting the work that he did and hoping that that work will continue even though now that he's gone.
All right. Well,
And then also we have lots of talk about President Trump and President Macron meeting in France, the two of them speaking at a press conference where President Trump talking still about that meeting that his son had with the Russian Kremlin-linked lawyers, saying that zero happened at the meeting, but also some pointed policy discussions getting a lot of attention on social media. Macron talking about climate change promises that Trump had made during the campaign, saying that he thought the president would live up to those. So some pointed policy moments there, but in that press conference in France, a lot of talk still about Russia. Many people noting on social media, even though the president perhaps wanted to get away from the Russia talk and get out of the U.S. on this France trip, it has dogged him even across the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah,
it
follows him along.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson ends his Persian Gulf trip with no breakthrough on the Qatar blockade. Four policemen are killed in a terrorist attack in violence-plagued southwest Pakistan. The political divide deepens in Turkey as the anniversary of the failed coup approaches. And the U.S. federal government charges more than 400 with health care fraud. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
In our solar system and beyond, objects such as planets, comets, and asteroids are quite common. A pair of scientists are proposing a new planetary object they call a synestia. Simon Locke from Harvard University and Sarah Stewart from the University of California, Davis, described their suggested object as a huge, spinning, donut-shaped mass of hot, vaporized rock that is formed when planet-sized objects smash into each other. Stewart says early in its history, Earth was likely to have once been a synestia, since it, along with other rocky planets, as Mars and Venus, were formed as smaller objects smashed into each other. The researchers say these collisions were so violent that before cooling and solidifying into the planets of today, the remains melted and vaporized, forming a synestia. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a singer from the Washington, D.C. area tours to promote his new album. U.S. President Donald Trump has held talks with his French counterpart in Paris ahead of Bastille Day celebrations that will see American and French troops marching together Friday on the famed Champs-Élysées. The two-day trip could be somewhat of a respite from media scrutiny on alleged links between Trump's presidential campaign and Russia, but he was expected to face further questions during a news conference in Paris late Thursday relating to a meeting last year between his son, Donald Trump Jr., and a Russian lawyer. The younger Trump released emails showing he believed the meeting was to discuss possible damaging material against the campaign of Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton. Well, Trump spoke in Paris following Thursday's talks with French President Emmanuel Macron. He noted the 100th anniversary of the U.S. entry into World War I.
We remember the tens of thousands of Americans who gave their lives in that valiant and very difficult struggle. We also pay tribute to the heroic deeds of the French troops whose courage at the Battle of Marne and countless other battles will never be forgotten by us. More than 1 million French soldiers laid down their lives in defense of liberty. Their sacrifice is an eternal tribute to France and to freedom. French and American patriots have fought together, bled together, and died together in the fight for our countries and our civilizations. Today, we face new threats from rogue regimes like North Korea, Iran, and Syria, and the governments that finance and support them. We also face grave threats from terrorist organizations that wage war on innocent lives.
That's President Trump speaking in Paris. Well, President Trump defended his outreach to Russia in an interview before his departure to Paris. He spoke with the Christian Broadcasting Network on Wednesday. Trump also defended his son, Donald Jr., a day after the release of emails that rocked official Washington. These emails revealed a meeting last year between Trump campaign officials and a Russian lawyer who offered damaging information on his election opponent, Democrat Hillary Clinton. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
This has held.
In an interview with conservative Christian broadcaster Pat Robertson, President Trump said he gets along very well with Russian President Vladimir Putin.
But I do believe it's important to have a dialogue. And if you don't have a dialogue, it's a lot of problems for our country and for their country. I think we need dialogue.
Trump also used Twitter to defend his son, Donald Jr., after the release of emails that detailed a meeting during last year's presidential campaign with a Russian lawyer offering damaging information about Hillary Clinton. Trump once again slammed the Russia investigation as a witch hunt, but the president's nominee to head the FBI, Christopher Wray, disagreed with that description at his Senate confirmation hearing.
That's correct, Senator. My loyalty is to the Constitution, to the rule of law, and to the mission of the FBI. And no one asked me for any kind of loyalty oath at any point during this process, and I sure as heck didn't offer one.
The revelations in Donald Trump Jr.'s emails have put the Trump White House on the defensive and sparked concern from Democrats, including Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia.
Nothing is proven yet, but we're now beyond obstruction of justice in terms of what's being investigated. This is moving into perjury, false statements, and even into potentially treason.
Some Republicans also registered concern, including House Speaker Paul Ryan.
I supported Bob Mueller being appointed special counsel, and I think we need to let him and his team and our investigators here do their jobs.
Their furor over the Trump email revelations has once again put the White House on the defensive over possible links with Russia, says analyst Kyle Condick.
The constant stream of negative stories coming out about Russia is at the very least a distraction. Whether it actually poses a legal threat to the Trump administration or to people in the Trump administration, you know, sort of remains to be seen.
John Fortier.
On VOA's Encounter program, analyst John Fortier says public concern over the Russia probe is taking a toll on the president's approval rating.
When he fired Jim Comey, he went down, and he's sitting at about 40% now. Those are things that are not helping the president and not likely to go away right away.
The focus on Trump and Russia is also complicating Republican efforts to follow through on their pledge to repeal and replace President Obama's signature health care law. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. R&B crooner Gallant is touring with multiple Grammy winner John Legend this year in support of his first album, Ology. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, the Washington, D.C. native is gaining worldwide attention as the future of R&B. Pulling my way.
Christopher Gallant, who uses only his last name on stage, made his national television debut last year on The Tonight Show, starring Jimmy Fallon. Gallant sang his tune Weight in Gold and earned a standing ovation from the audience. Now he is touring with another soulful crooner, multiple Grammy winner John Legend. Gallant says that he first took up music by playing the cello as a child, which gave him the foundation he needed.
You know, I didn't use my cello to write songs, but it was just all part of my like musical development in some way. You know, like I could read music because I played the cello. I just had like a very nascent, kind of ever growing and changing, just musical understanding, just from my foundations and, you know, with that instrument.
The 25-year-old singer says that he patterned his music after his childhood heroes, but his first attempts at songwriting were not what he would want anyone to hear.
So I think a lot of it was pretty, like lyrically pretty, you know, cheesy and just stuff that I thought you had to say, you know, but I, you know, would occasionally kind of try and manipulate it to mean something a little bit deeper and a little bit more personal and just a little bit more idiosyncratic, but it was still, even then, just, you know, in my stupid teenage brain, so it wasn't very good.
After graduating from NYU, where he studied music, Gallant moved to Los Angeles in 2013. He released his EP Zebra the year after that. His signature falsetto style earned him praise, and Spotify labeled him one of 15 artists destined to break out in 2016. Gallant says that his current success is in contrast to his early songwriting efforts, which he said were primarily a free form of psychotherapy.
I always kind of just like doing my own thing. I think maybe way back, I might have, you know, like early teenage, maybe even earlier, like done the, like put some stuff on YouTube that I probably quickly took down. But I really just did it for myself. Like it was just, you know, like a therapeutic kind of thing. It was like free psychotherapy in a way. I've been talking to myself
lately. Gallant told the Associated Press recently that he went back to look at his early lyrics and cringed when he read them.
I did go back in my email, like maybe like 12 years, and I did find some stuff that I'm not gonna say I regret making, but some stuff that I probably would not want anyone to hear. But it was, you know, it was all very just, you know, stupid, you know, overly dramatic, early teenage type of stuff.
Gallant is opening for John Legend on Legend's current Darkness and Light tour. His 45-minute set has audiences singing and dancing along to songs from Ology. The tour continues in the United States through July before heading to Europe in September. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
Thanks very much, David. That is our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
In another sign of the United States' determination to help the nations of Africa combat terrorism, millions of dollars in rewards are being offered for information on several top leaders of the Al-Qaeda-linked Somalia-based terrorist organization Harakat Shabab al-Mujahideen, or Al-Shabaab. The group, listed as a foreign terrorist organization since 2008, is battling that nation's government for control of Somalia and has also carried out a string of attacks in Kenya, most recently at a college in the town of Garissa. It is responsible for the deaths of thousands of Somali civilians, peace activists, international aid workers, journalists, and civilians, as well as African Union peacekeepers who are helping to restore stability and prosperity to the region. Tens of thousands of people have been forced to flee their homes amid the fighting. Under the terrorist designation, the United States imposed financial and other restrictions on the group, blocking property and prohibiting U.S. persons from engaging in transactions with its members. Now the U.S. is offering rewards for information leading to the location of six of its leaders. Rewards of up to $5 million each are offered for information on the location of Ibrahim Haji Jama, also known as Abu Zalma, Fuad Muhammad Khalaf, a dual Somali and Swedish national, also known as Fuad Shungala, Bashir Mohammed Mahmoud, an al-Shabaab military commander believed to have been born between 1979 and 1982, and Mukhtar Robo, a 43-year-old who has served as an al-Shabaab spokesman and who carries an Eritrean passport. Rewards of up to $3 million each are offered for information on the location of two additional al-Shabaab leaders, Abdullahi Yare and the group's intelligence chief, Zakaria Ismail Ahmed Hersi, also known as Zaki Madobi. The United States guarantees all credible reports will be investigated, and the identity of all informants will be kept confidential. If appropriate, the U.S. is prepared to protect informants by relocating them. If you have information on any of these men, contact the Regional Security Office at the nearest U.S. Embassy and the tip line at www.rewardsforjustice.net or email information to rfj@state.gov.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.